Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hello, I'm Larry Mueller, and sort of get two-for-one pricing today here because we've got a couple of guests for you. Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, has stopped by. Mike Maddox has also stopped by. Mike, Rock County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, and they've been with us singly in the past. Today, we were lucky enough to get them both together, so I can't imagine a question that they would be unable to answer in the gardening area.
Keep throwing that clarify on the garden-related questions.
Okay. Tell you what, if you have a question for them, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Mike, welcome.
Good to be here.
Lisa, welcome to you.
Thanks a lot.
What are you hearing from people these days? What kinds of questions are you getting from the homeowners in Dane County?
Gypsy moth still.
Yeah, lots of gypsy moth questions. And Mike, what about Rock County?
I think I got my first box elder bug question yesterday. So we're going to be starting on that one.
Yeah, we've had quite a few of those on the show here in the last few. Phil Pelletieri was on yesterday, so we addressed the box elder situation fairly completely on yesterday's program, so we may not get any questions in that area.
That's fine with me.
Well, I tell you what, Sally has a question for you that does not relate to box elders at all. It relates to her lawn, I believe. Sally, hi.
Hi, thanks so much. Because of these programs in the past, I thought it's proper to fertilize your lawn at least three times a year, spring, summer, and end of October. I only have done it once this year. I think it was in May.
Yeah.
I hope I can do it at the end of October. Should I get another one in right now or just let it go?
Let it go.
Okay.
Yeah. Shoot for after Halloween. Put on your costume and fertilize then.
And frankly, you're from Middleton. We had an awfully dry July, and it wouldn't have been a good idea to fertilize then, would it? I don't think so.
Not at all.
No.
Oh, okay.
So you did the right thing there. You might have missed that Labor Day one, but
yeah, I did.
But the best one to do, isn't it, is the October one?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So good.
Circa Halloween.
Thank you so much. I'm feeling much better then.
Glad we could make your day.
Thanks, Sally. Thanks for calling. Michelle in Evansville. Hi to you.
Hi. Hey, I have a question about an aster plant. It bloomed beautifully for 2 years, and then the third year it got infested with what we thought was lace bug or lace wing bug, and it dried up. It got brown. We put powder on it, and it came back a little bit and had a few blooms. But now the past 2 years, it comes up great, and then right around midsummer, it gets the same symptoms, but we have not been able to find any sign of insects.
Okay, so you haven't seen any spider mites or lace bugs?
Nothing.
Alrighty. How about any kind of fungal symptoms, any spots, or are you just saying that the plant turns brown?
Yeah, it has some spots. It kind of turns black-ish. It gets like black spots, and then the whole stem turns black, and then the leaves turn black.
Okay, that's a fungal disease of some kind. I couldn't tell you without doing a lab test on it, so my next recommendation is that if the plant is important to you enough that you want to pay the fee for the lab, that you send a piece of it in next year when it starts to do that. The lab is located on campus. That's the Plant Disease Diagnostics Center, and I believe it's $15 for a test.
Okay.
But
does it spread to other plants? Because it seemed to kind of go up and affect another broadleaf plant, my echinacea.
That's in the same family, of course.
Yeah.
Without knowing exactly what kind of disease you've got, it's really hard to predict that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the easiest thing might be to just take that particular plant out and some of the soil around it.
Okay.
All right.
So it's common for a fungal to like affect the plant year after year?
Not real common, but on the other hand, if you don't remove all the leaf litter in the fall, the spores could be overwintering in that leaf litter or in the soil right around it.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Thanks a lot for calling. Mike in Madison, your turn. Hi, Mike.
Hello. Good morning. I have 2 1-year-old river birch in my front yard, and they both need trimming. And I wondered, when's the best time of the year to do that?
Oh, I wouldn't do it now. I would wait until what we call the late dormant season, which actually falls into the late February, March, up to April, up to the point where they start to break bud.
Okay.
With those type of trees, you can lump maples into that category too. They might do what we call bleed on you in the process, where they're going to ooze sap from those cuts that you make.
Okay.
I'll just throw this out here right now. Don't panic over that. It's just going to be a natural process of the sap moving through those wounds. If it really bothers you, just wash it off with soapy water, but don't try to seal it off in any way. It'll heal over and it'll stop on its own.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too, if you have a question for us at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Lisa Johnson and Mike Maddox, Dane County and Rock County, UW Extension horticulture educators, our guests today. And Phyllis in Dubuque, you're next. Hi, Phyllis.
Good morning. My son and I planted buttercup and butternut squash, and they did wonderful. And then it was time to pick them. Here they were all rotted, and I never had that happen before. I wondered what possibly could have caused it.
Oh, boy. Now, did you get the rain in August?
Yeah, we had quite the rain. It didn't rain a huge amount, but it rained often.
I've had several reports of that coming in this year where they've had just these really great-looking fruit developing, and you just can't wait to taste them. But then, I've had master gardeners come up and say they've just tasted horrible and we're all mushy inside. I'm thinking a lot of it might have had to do with the weather we had with that flush of rain. Everything just got really super saturated and moist that we just wound up in some places not having a good crop.
Yeah. So we have to blame Mother Nature, not ourselves.
I think so.
Okay.
Thanks, Phyllis.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or in the Madison area. Reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Doesn't sound like Phyllis is going to have a lot of extra produce there, especially with her squash, but I did get an email from a listener who, just to remind gardeners that if you have a surplus of anything, there are places you can donate. Isn't that right, Mike?
Yeah, between the food pantries and local churches, there's all sorts of drop-off spots you can take your extra produce. I know in Rock County with our community garden program, I think we're up to about 24. Do I dare say? I think it's like I'll say 20,000 pounds we probably donated this year to food pantries.
Wow, that's great.
And what's really amazing is you don't even get it in the door and on the floor, and people are already
there to pick
it
up.
Yeah,
oh, that's wonderful.
So there is a need for this for the produce out there.
All
so,
that extra zucchini.
Yeah, and anything else that you've got that's extra, take a look in your community and check the food pantries.
Yeah, I will say on behalf of all the food pantries, give them a call ahead. Make sure they are open that day. See what requirements they have regarding drop-off. Some of them require the produce to be lightly washed because they don't have the facilities to do it. Find out the days that they can have distribution going on so you can get it there in a timely fashion and it can be processed accordingly rather than dropping it off and have it sit for 3 days.
Yep, makes good sense. Malika, I believe, is next in Madison. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, I actually had a question in regards to planting like spinach and collard greens and kale late into the season. Like, I know that if it gets cold, it's supposed to, take in more sugar and taste better. But I was wondering, like, is it too late to plant it now? I kind of was curious at the timeline about when to plant those crops.
While you're in Madison, Lisa, what do you think?
I think you're getting a little late. Probably it would have been better at the beginning of September. You can still do it. It's just that you're going to have microgreens instead of maxi greens, shall we say.
I see what you're saying.
You might want to, if you have any kind of cold frame or if you can put the plants up against the house, that will help protect them from frost or freeze, I should say. Frost is fine. Freeze is not so good.
Yeah.
Okay, and then what kind of a cold frame would you recommend?
Oh, boy, there are a lot of different models out there. It pretty much depends on how much you want to spend on it.
Yeah, I actually use one that's an old window from the house my brother demolished, and my dad put it on hinges and put it on some boards, and it's like 12 inches high in the front, 18 inches in the back, and you know, it's just a window on a hinge you could open and close. You can be as creative with them as you want.
Yeah, cool.
Okay, sounds great. Thank you so much.
There used to be an extension publication on that hot beds and cold frames.
You know, a quick Google search is going to pull up any number of publications, either from our university or others, regarding cold frames. So there's just a lot of information. They don't need to be fancy. I know some master gardeners who will go as far as they'll take a large laundry basket and a clear plastic bag and slide things in and out of there. And for many of for much of what they want to grow, that's working for them.
Hmm. Joanne in Menominee, Michigan, you are next. Hi, Joanne.
Good morning.
Morning.
I've got a problem with, it looks like crop circles, only it's in my yard. A couple of years ago, I had these, and I was able to lift the grass up like it was carpeting. And there were some grubs, but not too many. And I treated them with a grub killer, and it seemed to get better. But now I've got perfect circles again with the grass dying.
Are they large circles or small circles?
They're big. They're very big circles.
What's big? A foot? 2 foot?
No, I'd say about 5 feet.
Oh.
Well, I was going to say, you need a product labeled for extraterrestrial aliens.
5 feet is...
I can't find that.
That eliminates the dog urine.
I have dogs, and that's not what it is.
Yeah.
There are a number of... grass diseases that have smaller spots than that, but if you're saying they're perfect circles,
they are.
I doubt that's grub.
No.
It sounds like some kind of turf disease. You could send a sample into the turf lab in Madison.
That big, you might want to do that too.
Yeah,
I was going to say, if you can get to the edge of one of your crop circles and get a minimum 4x4, but you know, up to 8x8 sample of the
inches.
Inches. Yes. Let me throw units on that.
The grass and the roots.
Yeah, of the grass and the roots. Get
whatever
the whole area.
Are.
Wrap it up in some foil. Get it to your extension office. See if they can take a look at it, or get it into the TDL, the Turf Diagnostic Laboratory, and they'll take a look at it. And what they're going to do is they're going to look for grubs, look for fungicides, and probably check on your species of grass to see
when
if that's
a problem. When I dug it up a couple of years ago, there were grubs, but very few. Seemed like the grubs shouldn't have done that.
Grubs are not going to do a perfect circle.
It's a nice circle, too.
Well, make sure, though, that you do get some of the diseased and some of the not diseased grass. That's what Mike was getting at with getting the edge so that they can see that margin.
And snap a couple pictures and include it with it, too. Sometimes, you know, when they say a picture's worth 1,000 words, there's some truth to that.
You might even be able to, I don't know, you know, in your state what they do in terms of lab diagnosis, but here they sometimes will do... A digital photo diagnosis. It, you know, depends on the disease whether you can tell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can get a nice picture from the upstairs bedroom window.
Ooh.
You know, it looks like a crop circle.
well, good
thank
luck.
You.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Joanne. Appreciate it. And we've got more callers online. Our guests today, we got a couple of great guests for you, Lisa Johnson and Mike Maddox. They're both UW Extension horticulture educators. Lisa with Dane County, Mike with Rock County. Jim Packard's our producer, as he always is. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Net. Larry Mueller with Lisa Johnson and Mike Maddox, UW Extension horticulture educators, our guest today. Give us a call if you have a question at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. And our next caller is Ted in Appleton. So let's go to Ted. Hi, Ted.
Hi. A garden-related question. We had kind of low yield for tomatoes and some of our other vegetables this last summer. And I'm wondering, our neighbor said we should prepare the soil a little differently this fall, and he suggested manure. But I wonder if your guest had any suggestions on how to prepare the soil for next spring for the planting next year.
Well, if you had low yield, did you have green leafy growth, though, on the plants?
Yes, we did. We did a little bit. Like, for instance, on our tomato plants, we did quite a bit of trimming on them to sort of get rid of a lot of the green leafy, and we try to produce more of the fruit. But I don't know. It just seemed like we just... just had a very poor yield.
Yeah, one of my hesitations with just telling you to do more manure on them would be if already you had too much nitrogen in your soil and it's favoring green leafy growth, vegetative growth versus flowers and fruit production. So before you just go dump more manure or any kind of fertilizer onto your garden, I do recommend a soil test to see where your nutrient levels are at now. Keep that in mind, though. It will not tell you your nitrogen load in there or how much you need to put in, but it is, will give you a baseline to start with. Other factors you're going to need to look at for determining fruit set will be amount of light that you're getting to the area. Maybe some things have changed, trees have grown. You'll need to look to make sure your garden's getting about 6 hours or plus of light. Check your watering. I think there's probably a lot of little things that could be going on that could be impacting your yield and not just the amount of nutrients you're putting down. I will say, though, whatever you can do for organic matter to put into your soil, that would be compost or other kind of leafy debris, leaf clippings, etc., to increase the organic matter content of your soil will help. But by coming in with manure, you may just be putting too much nutrients in there, too much nitrogen, and that's not going to help your fruit set that you're getting.
Okay.
Well, we've had the garden for about 8 years. We have not put any manure in it to speak of. So we've been sort of not doing anything like that. We haven't put any leafy substance in there, and I know that the it does get quite a bit of light. There's no trees around it, and it gets pretty much a full day's sun.
Well, then if you don't have a history of making any kind of manure applications, then I would consider it. Again, I do recommend a soil test. That is a good place way to establish a baseline. A little may be enough. You may not want to pile it on. Maybe an inch or two and work it into the soil with your tiller would be a good start for incorporating it.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
And hopefully not green manure.
Yeah. Oh, you mean fresh manure?
Fresh.
Yeah, you want it to be composted at least a year. You don't want it to come in super hot, straight out of the cow, you might say. You know, have it be sitting in the back 40 for at least a season and bring it in. And
okay, good luck. Thanks a lot for calling, Ted. Dolores in Kenosha, it is now your turn. Hi, Dolores. Oh,
good morning.
Morning.
I have a question about garden flocks. I have some that could use dividing this year and thinning out. And they're along a fence which the neighbor is planning on replacing sometime this fall. How late can I go into the fall and do this?
You're in Kenosha?
I'm in Kenosha.
Well, I wouldn't wait much longer.
Okay.
It probably would have been better to do around the 1st of September so that it gets a good month or so to root back in, but probably the soil won't be freezing for a while, particularly if you use mulch. So I'd say the sooner that you can do it, the better.
Okay.
All right.
But they're tough plants.
Yeah, they're tough. But it's going to be a nice weekend, I think,
yep,
in southern Wisconsin. So might be a good time to do it, Dolores.
Break out the shovel.
Deborah in Prairie du Sac. Hello to you.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Oh, I'm very sad. I have a little Japanese maple I've raised for the last 4 years, and this season it's lost its color and started having its leaves wrinkle up, and of course I blamed it on the drought and the rains and such, but it just still is looking very sickly, except for one little sprout at the top, which has red leaves, and I'm not really sure what I should do to save it, so it's just this very sad-looking.
Did it crash on you this summer then? So last year it was fine, but then this year it developed the problems?
Yeah, it had a great spring. It was lush and red and just beautiful, but now it's just looking very sickly.
Well, one of the things that can come to mind for when a maple has a problem like that and to go so quickly and the leaves are, you know, brown and stay on, something like verticillium wilt comes to mind, and that's going to be a fungus that gets into the water conducting tissues, clogging them up, and then the plant just can't get the water up to the canopy it needs to survive. Probably the best way to confirm that would be to get a sample in for a test. Take some of that tissue that's not completely dead, a minimum of a pencil size, but anything larger would be better, and get that down to the lab, the disease diagnostic lab. Or, since you're up in that area, take it to your extension office and have one of the master gardeners take a look at it. There can be some signs to look at for streaking under the bark. that can be a clue that you have verticillium wilt. And then you can move on from there. If it is verticillium wilt, I do recommend getting that diagnosed and taking the appropriate steps.
Which is to get rid of it.
Just to get rid of it, get rid of the plant. Because if you come in and try to replant with another maple in that location, it has a tendency to be infected too.
Continue on the current road, 0.5 miles.
Or other plants can be infected by it. So there are some resistant ones that we can give you that list if need be. I don't have them memorized, but...
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, I lost some plants to verticillium wilt this summer, too, and it was kind of...
So sad.
It's sad, yeah. One of them was planted in memory of our daughter who passed away. So, Linda in La Crosse, it's your turn.
Thank you. I have a vegetable garden, and I've had it for years, of a tall fence around it, and I really haven't had a lot of trouble with animals in there, except this year. And toward the end of summer and now into fall, the vegetables that are left there, tomatoes, carrots, a few carrots, a couple of beets, have a huge bite mark out of them. It looks like some animal with sort of large teeth, and the bite will be about an inch wide, and just one bite, and then, of course, that ruins the entire vegetable, and I don't know what's in there.
Well, that could be a number of things, couldn't it, Lisa?
Yeah, my suspicion would be chipmunks, although possibly squirrels.
Big teeth?
Well, if you said the bite mark is about an inch, across,
right?
That's
chipmunk could do an inch,
Or a squirrel,
or multiple bites.
Yeah. It could be a squirrel too.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, and they can climb the
right. Exactly.
Would it be? Could it be a woodchuck?
They don't climb very well, I don't
know. No, and I've had chipmunks in my tomato patch before where they ate, like, huge holes in the fruit. So don't let their little size fool you as to them having delicate manners while eating your plants. They can do some big damage in your garden in spite of their size.
Wow.
You're not going to like my solution. I just didn't grow tomatoes this year.
No, I don't like that a bit. No, I didn't even think of a chipmunk or a squirrel.
You could probably put netting over the top of your enclosure. Well, I don't know how big your enclosure is.
It's a pretty big garden.
Okay. And do you have your tomatoes staked or in any kind of... Okay.
Yeah, well, they don't get up very high.
Yeah.
Of course, they don't have to because, they grow so easily. And then, the ones that will drop off. But just one bite, and then they go on to another one.
I know. It's so rude. It's like it's like when the rabbits or the chipmunks or the squirrels take the top of your tulip. They just bite off the top, and then they don't even eat it.
I know.
It's just...
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And let's see here. We've got Jerry and Viola next, I believe. Jerry, hi to you. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks. You may have answered my question with your chipmunk squirrel routine, but this summer all of my beets were gnawed away. Not the greens, but the top of the bulb itself.
Mm-hmm.
Turnips were not eaten. Carrots were not eaten. Rutabagas were not eaten. But the beets and occasionally a tomato would be bitten that way. Now, I have a 2-foot rodent fence around,
mm-hmm.
and I also have a electric fence because we got a lot of deer up here. And I'm wondering, what it might be and what I can do to prevent it next year.
I have heard of, I can't remember whether it was squirrels or chipmunks, but one of those two biting around the top of the root.
Uh-huh.
Now, what you can do is a little bit more difficult.
Yeah.
With animals, there's never really just one good tried-and-true solution
right. Outside
of shooting them. you can try to... I like to tell people, try to start with whatever they can have in the area that would be the habitat that those animals would be living in. Say if you got a wood pile nearby, get rid of it, and maybe that'll take care of a place where rabbits would be hiding.
I got 40 acres of woods nearby.
Well, then, just get rid of all that. That should take care of it. So you're going to be going to the exclusion route. So keeping up with your netting or your fence and your electric fence is good. But I'm sure they're finding ways to get around that then. So what then you need to do is come in with maybe some decoys or predator decoys.
Uh-huh.
That's the fake owl in the area. And, you know, you want to move it around, because if they get used to that owl always sitting in the same spot, they're going to realize you're bluffing.
There's no spray or anything like something.
Well, you could use something like liquid fence around the fenced area where you have the plants, but I sure wouldn't want to use it too close to where the plants are planted. It's pretty revolting
obnoxious
stuff.
Yeah.
And whenever you
spray on the plant and then wash off when it's ready.
No.
And whenever you use any type of product like that, they too can get used to the smell. So by mixing up a variety of things, because you know you have the liquid fence, which can stink, but needs to be reapplied. But people want to come out there with like human hair. Well, they'll get used to that after a while. But, I mean, there's all sorts of products, ivory soap. You know, just keep mixing things up.
Yeah. Okay. But netting might do it.
That might help if you had, say, a small fence around where the plants are actually planted and you wanted to drape netting over the top of that.
Uh-huh.
That might work real well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that helps.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it.
Good luck.
If you happen to be in the, by the way, if you want to join in, the number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison. Reach us at 263-1890. Give us a call. You can email us, too, at talk@wpr.org. I did want to mention, if you're in the Madison area this coming weekend, this Saturday, October 6th, you want to meet the Vicars of Vegetables, Jim Nienhuis and Irwin Goldman. They have their giant pumpkin regatta this Saturday at 11 o'clock at the Memorial Union waterfront. Jim tells me they've developed a sleek sailing squash that students, faculty, and visitors will race. And here's the ticket. If you want to race one, you can actually race one. You can paddle it and stick them in the water. And I've watched it. It's a lot of fun to watch. Anybody can join and paddle in if they want to. The Horticulture Club is also selling pumpkins. And apparently Jim has put together quite a list of unusual pumpkins that they've grown and will have for sale as well. So if you haven't seen a giant pumpkin regatta, Irwin Goldman out there paddling against some of his students, it's worth the trip. So that's 11 o'clock Saturday at the Memorial Union waterfront. Not to be missed. But I know, too, that you're not going to be there, Mike, because
you're going
to be doing something else.
Yeah, the Janesville Shade Tree Advisory Council is going to be hosting their Arbor Fest from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. At Traxler Park. There will be a variety of speakers there regarding trees and tree care and tree pests and everything you want to know about trees. I'll be there all day. I'm doing a little spot at 3 o'clock on just questions and answers regarding trees. Very similar to this, just in person. It's a free family event, so I know you are welcome to come on down if you happen to be in the Janesville area. Traxler Park, it's follow the signs for the Aqua Jays, and that'll get you there.
Okay. All right. Well, Rose in Menominee Falls has a question for you guys, so let's go to Rose. Hi, Rose.
Hi there. I have a small garden area just outside my house that has mainly flowers in it. It has basil and I have a lavender plant. And when I go in there or disturb any of those plants, these tiny, they look white, but they fly up and they're so fast and they don't land on anything. I can't even see what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And something has eaten. I already harvested all of my basil because it was getting filled with holes.
Yeah.
And I have another plant that's filled with holes. And I don't know if, I assume it's that. And a couple of those I'm going to want to bring in for the winter, but I don't want to be bringing in bugs.
Well, Lisa, you have an idea what those bugs might be?
Well, I was wondering about whiteflies.
That's what came to my mind.
Yeah. If you look on the bottom of the leaf, that's where they usually hang out.
Mm-hmm.
They're very small, about a 16th of an inch.
Mm-hmm.
And they do lay their eggs there, and you might need to take a magnifying glass to see them, but they do lay their eggs on the bottom of the leaf. They're real common on greenhouse crops.
Mm-hmm.
Basil, I guess I wouldn't be too surprised. Geraniums, et cetera.
I'm looking right now on the bottom of one of my rose leaves, and I see a tiny white something.
Speck.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that very well could be it. Does it fly if you poke at it?
Or is it an egg?
Yeah, it could be an egg as well.
And now I lost it. but they fly. They'll like fly up when I
right.
get by them, and I can't even. I've tried to look and to see one better.
Right. I know they're difficult to get to stay still, and because of that, it's difficult to treat them. The problem is that, like on the basil in particular. Now you said you'd harvested that,
mm-hmm.
So you know what I'm not particularly thrilled myself about eating whitefly eggs on my basil, but not that it would probably do you any harm. But if there are some things out there like geraniums, hibiscus that you might want to be bringing inside, I probably would give those, at least the hibiscus, a good spray with insecticidal soap before you bring it in.
Okay.
Preferably two rounds. Usually what you need to do, because a lot of these products will kill the adults but not the eggs,
uh-huh.
Is that you need to spray one round, particularly concentrating on the bottoms of the leaves, because that's where a lot of our pests are, the spider mites and the white flies in particular. And then I usually leave it in a plastic bag overnight and then take it out, let it dry off, you bring it inside, and about 10 days later, because that's about the hatching rate of these things, you take it outside and spray it again.
Oh.
Before you put it in with your other plants, so that you make sure that you don't import anything from outside that you don't wish to.
Okay. Yeah, I usually spray with the hose real hard
mm-hmm.
once. Then I usually do two applications of insecticidal soap. But
that sounds
I have
good.
A couple of very large plants, so once I bring them in, they're set.
Right, right.
But, okay, well, and just the insectus. Now, the rose bush, or the rose plant, I've managed to keep that okay, but I've had to spray it regularly with rose, whatever special rose thing there is, and that seems to work okay on that.
Yeah, the roses are tough to grow inside. I tried mightily to grow mini roses inside for a number of years, and it was either powdery mildew or spider mites that got them every time. But yeah, roses, even outside, the hybrid teas and so on, do, if you want to keep them real clean, do need some kind of spray. Now, if you're growing something like rugosa roses, about the only thing you need to worry about is the occasional aphid attack and, of course, Japanese beetles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the rose is okay. Can I bring lavender in?
Well, you can try. It often isn't very successful because they need a lot of light but cool temperatures and drier conditions inside, and they often end up with powdery mildew.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And now let's see. Marilyn in South Range, you are next. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi. We have a problem with growing strawberries. We had a patch that has been there for 10, 15 years. It was getting overrun by wild strawberries because we're mm-hmm. right in the middle of a big field, and it was about time that we renew it. So we planted with plants from Jung's, which is, you know, good stock, and
yeah.
they were Sparkle, which mm-hmm. was supposed to be pretty hardy. They were planted. They started out for about 3 days, and then all of a sudden, they're going downhill.
Hmm.
They were, you know, the leaves would turn black or dark, and I first of all thought it was because of the great amount of drought that we had up here in the North Country. But in the we replanted, and this fall we've gotten about 10 inches of rain, and so the same thing happened with the second batch that we got, and this time we kind of covered them because I thought, well, maybe there's an insect eating them or whatever, and three plants survived. The rest of them, of the 25 that we have, are just totally dead. black. Just not, you know.
When you replanted, did you replant in the same
soil?
Yes.
That's what I was wondering. Could it be the soil?
Well, I'm wondering about that. I'm also wondering if, you know, not to malign your supplier, but occasionally things do happen where they come in on the rootstock. So it could be the soil, it could be the rootstock, but it sounds pretty fungal to me.
Well, and initially I'm thinking that you've got a problem that's going to be too big for us to solve over the radio this. I think to harvest a plant in some soil and maybe get it in for testing, do a soil test, talk to your supplier.
Take it back to Jung's,
see if they've had any issues with anybody else and work through it in a polite manner. Yeah. Would be a good start. But, yeah, to have it blackened, like, after 3 days and to repeat.
Well, and all of them.
All of them.
That doesn't sound like an insect. That sounds like a disease. And it could be soil-borne. I would try replanting next time in a different spot.
Okay. So, you know, that's what I was wondering. If we just kind of let the soil sit for, a year or two? Or should we just look at it for a totally different area?
I'd look for a total. Well, first of all, do what Mike suggested. You know, talk to the supplier, see if they've had any problems with it. You might want to send a sample in to the disease diagnostics clinic. And, you know, if depending on what information you get, you may want to try a completely different area.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Lisa Johnson and Mike Maddox are guests today, UW Extension Horticulture Educators. Lisa works out of Dane County. Mike works out of Rock County. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Net. Larry Mueller with Lisa Johnson and Mike Maddox. And Catherine and McFarland is next. So let's go to Catherine. Hi, Catherine.
Hello. I have a question about a woman that just called in about moving her plants along the fence, and I didn't catch what plant it was.
It was a phlox, garden phlox.
Garden phlox. Mm-hmm.
Oh, is it too late to move mums and peonies?
Peonies, I'd say you just still might be able to get it. Well, boy, it's pretty late for peonies. Usually, again, you want to do that around, you know, the first 15th of September, you know, first couple of weeks of September, and
we're into the first week of October.
Yeah, you're in McFarland, though.
Yeah.
It'll be dicey. I wouldn't worry with the phlox, but with mums, which tend to have problems getting established over the winter, and with peonies, I'd say wait until next year.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thanks for calling. Ella in Beloit, your turn. Hi, Ella.
Good morning.
Hi.
I have always had a nice lawn, but I'm getting kind of crippled up and I don't take it good care of it as I should. The first part of October last year, my son put a winterizer with a weed killer on it. And so I didn't put a weed killer on it this spring. And I have an awful lot of crabgrass this year with big fat dandelions. What can I do now, within the next week? I'm going to get out there and do it, whether it kills me.
I was going to say, first of all, I get more lawn questions from Beloit than I think anywhere else. You know, because with me being in Rock County, I get a lot of phone calls from Beloit and their lawns.
And they just got a beautification award,
yeah,
by
you guys
the way,
just
Beloit.
Won an award.
Yeah.
Lawn care, made simple. Right now, the crabgrass is going to die. You're going to be successful with that come the first frost and freeze.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to have seeds that'll sprout in the spring.
And you worry about those in the spring.
When the forsythia.
Yeah, yeah. Right now, your focus is going to be on attacking those broadleaves. And my suggestion for that is to get yourself a liquid spray, a little handheld bottle, and go out of broadleaf weed killer. And tackle those plants now. Just spray the trouble spots where you have the dandelions. Spray them now, and then what doesn't die outright should be weakened enough that Mother Nature's going to kill it over the winter.
Okay.
Then, for your crabgrass control, you need to get your pre-emergent on before the seeds germinate. And as Lisa was saying, that's typically about the same time that forsythia is blooming. And that'll be the spring blooming shrub. It's got these bright yellow flowers. As soon as you see those blooms going, you put down your pre-emergent. And that's going to help tackle your crabgrass.
Oh, I see. Okay.
The other thing, when you're spraying your dandelions, if there are any that are in bloom or worse in seed, I would pick those off because the seed is not always affected by the spray.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to say I do have dandelions in bloom.
Yeah.
You're not alone. I have. Like want to come see mine?
Like I said, I've always had a really nice. Well, we're out my front yard, which has never had dandelions. I had a maple tree cut down a year ago this August.
Mm-hmm.
So it's gotten full sun ever since then.
Yeah, your dynamics in your yard has changed. And so it's not as much as you your yard getting used to it, but you getting used to the new management that needs to be done.
Right.
So by taking care of your broadleaf weeds in the fall this time of year and your crabgrass in the spring and doing regular fertilization at the holiday schedules, that's really going to put you on the track of getting your yard back into shape.
But I should still put on the winterizer.
Correct.
Yes.
In the 6 weeks or so like that.
Yeah, around Halloween would be a good time for that.
Oh, that's just a couple of weeks.
Yeah. three weeks.
Okay, then.
Time
Thank
flies.
You, Kylie.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Sarah in Eau Claire. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. My question is about a Japanese tree lilac. I have one that is about 6 years old, and this year I found that after its first bloom, there has been some white fungus on the base of the trunk, as well as it looks like a woodpecker has been making holes in it. I'm wondering, the lady that called about the Japanese maple, would that disease affect the lilac as well?
Oh, boy. Verticillium wilt affects a lot of different plants, but I don't think Japanese tree lilac is on that.
It'll hit some lilacs.
There's been reports of it in lilac, but typically that tends to be resistant. What I'm imagining, and of course I'm going off your description that you've given to me via the radio here, is not so much a vert wilt issue. I'm suspecting possibly maybe a root rot that's kicked in.
Yeah, and
you've
then
got
borers.
Decay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think probably your best thing to do is take a couple pictures of it and get it into the extension office to have Tom Kalb or one of the master gardeners take a look at it to direct you accordingly. I think it's probably going to be, you know, again, off the radio description here, kind of a root rot planting issue. Maybe there was some damage done to the trunk and you've got decay organisms and now insects in there.
Yeah, because the woodpeckers know if there's borers in there, and so that's when they start doing their thing. And usually the borers are not the primary cause, but they'll finish it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And Gloria in La Crosse, I think, is next. So let's hold on a second here. Let's see if we got Gloria. Are you there? Hi, Gloria.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. Thanks
can you hear me?
Yes. Thanks for calling.
Yes. Thanks. Thanks for taking my call. My problem has to do with vegetable garden.
Okay.
And I just had it in this location for the last couple of years. Last year I had pumpkins and squash, and this year I didn't do anything with pumpkins, but I had squash, a couple different varieties. And I noticed we were, like, plagued with this large bug, a little bit larger than a box elder, but gray. And perhaps you've talked about it on a previous segment or something. And they would just eat the half the, you know, fruit from the bottom. You'd go to pick, you know, your fruit and say, you know, it looks like a beautiful fruit, but then you'd pick it and it would be, you know, half gone.
Gray, you say, huh?
Yeah.
Hmm. And how big is it?
It's a little bit bigger than a box elder bug. And well, I was just wondering if you had anybody else calling in about...
Did you touch any of them? Did they smell at all?
No.
Okay.
No. But I noticed, like, the first year, there were, like, these little red egg-like things on the leaves.
Ah, and squash bug.
Is that what that is?
Yeah, they... I remember Karen showed me pictures of them. They lay their eggs in these neat little rows. They're kind of orangish red underneath the leaf. Yeah, that is a squash bug.
Okay.
And there are several insecticides that you can use, but we'd, of course, prefer not to have to use them.
Right.
So you might be able to use row covers, the floating row covers. Another thing to do is to check let's see, I'm trying to find the, I know we have a fact sheet on this, and I don't remember off the top of my head when the squash bug lays its eggs, because if you can start scouting ahead of that and find out exactly when it lays its eggs, then you can sometimes get ahead of it and squash the eggs before they start causing you a problem. Here we go, squash bug. All right. Yes, it is gray. It is about the size of a box elder bug. And
okay.
Let's see.
Do they
when...
migrate in, or do they live in the soil? Or
okay, let's see here. They, yeah, they will also cause vine feeding problems, and then get the rest of the problem, or get the get your vine wilting too. Okay, so they lay their eggs. Let's see, in middle of June or so. So start scouting about the first week of June, and they start, the eggs will start to hatch late June, early July.
Okay,
and then the immatures are around for quite a while before they actually reach maturity.
Right.
So they do overwinter as adults. And so if you make sure to clean up the material around the plants, all of the old leaves and vines, and, you know, and maybe even any mulch to make sure that they're not overwintering and laying eggs there for next year.
Crop rotation, too, I would think. Move your pumpkin squash patch to a different location as well.
If I don't plan to have any squash or pumpkins next year, will they affect like the cucumbers like they did this year, do you think? And also a question is, my neighbor went and took some of the, you know, the ruined squash and stuff and put around his pine tree. Is that going to damage the pine tree at all?
No, it shouldn't damage the pine tree, but cucumbers are cucurbits.
Right.
Let's see, we've got cucumber beetles that will hit the cucumbers, and they will, in fact, get your cucumbers, too. So definitely good cleanup, and good cleanup around cucumbers that you're growing this year, too. Is a good idea.
Okay, and is there anything else I can add to the soil to prepare it for next year at all?
Organic matter.
Organic matter. Okay. Okay. I do have one other question, if I could.
Okay.
Briefly, I have a rhododendron plant that I bought last year, and it didn't winter very good. And I was just wondering, I did buy a new one, and I put it in the same area, and I noticed now that the bottom leaves are turning red. Is there something I can do to prepare it for winter to kind of help it survive through the winter?
I'm sorry, I missed it. Did you say that it was a deciduous leaf azalea?
Rhododendron.
Okay, it's a rhododendron. Mm-hmm. All azaleas are rhododendrons, and I missed whether you said azalea or rhododendron.
Okay.
And so this is an evergreen type. Or semi-evergreen type.
Yeah.
You can keep it mulched.
Okay.
That's always a good thing. If it's in a real windy spot, you might want to put up some hardware cloth around it and some burlap around that. You don't want the burlap actually touching the plant, but just acting as a windscreen.
Okay.
Is a good idea.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's great.
And if your soil, I don't know whether you've had a soil test, but if you haven't, you should probably have one done and make sure that your soil is acid enough for that rhododendron. Otherwise, you may need to add some iron sulfate or aluminum sulfate in the spring.
Okay. Sounds great. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure. Thanks, Gloria. Elaine, your turn in Richmond Township. Hi.
Hi. I have a poinsettia tree which grows maybe a foot each year. I bring it in. I put it out in the sun all summer and bring it in. Are poinsettia trees deciduous? I mean, could I just go ahead and plant it outside?
It's not hardy here.
Not hardy at all.
Yeah, they'll grow in Florida. Mexico is where they're...
Jamaica.
They're actually native to Mexico, but not going to be hardy here, I'm afraid.
Okay.
It's a nice thought. But...
Yeah, I've got another one going. I mean, it's grown like 18 inches just in this year.
Wow. Yeah.
I know, it's fantastic, and I bring them in. Pretty soon, I'll have to move out. So they're going.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, you know, you go to a place like Jamaica or Mexico, and you've probably visited there as well. Some of the poinsettia, they're
big hedges.
It's
just amazing.
Huge, enormous hedges. So that's kind of fun to see there, but you're not going to see them here.
No.
You're not going to see them here. You know, somebody else called in earlier, and I didn't want to mention that as well. And it had to do with the lady who called in with the 5-foot circle on her lawn.
Somebody else has aliens too?
Well, this person wondered if the lady had a kiddie pool. That's the size of a 5-foot diameter is the size of a kiddie pool. If she'd moved it around a little, even if she moved it around a little bit, what happens with those kiddie pools is that they'll burn the grass.
Yeah.
So if she had one of those and, you know, maybe moved it a time or two just to keep the grass, you know, okay, it wouldn't have made any difference. They still would have had, you still could get burning.
Yeah, that's the kind of information you just assume is going to be readily given. Yeah, you never
it was a
think
thought.
About, yeah.
It was a thought. Lisa Johnson and Mike Maddox, our guests today, UW Extension Horticulture Educators here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to another edition of Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller. My guests today, Lisa Johnson and Mike Maddox. Lisa's Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Mike is the same position, only for Rock County, and really pleased to have them with us today to answer your questions. And I know we have questions coming up about grass, about iris, about mulch. We've got strawberry garden questions, and you may have one in mind of your own. And if you do, I hope you'll join in because that's what they're here for. They're here to answer your questions. So give us a call. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890. And also, you can email us at talk@wpr.org. And I'll be back with my guests right after this look at the news. Stay with us. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest Lisa Johnson, Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator, and Mike Maddox, Rock County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Happy to have them along and certainly join in with your questions or comments as we move along here. Got full lines right now, so we'll go right to the phones and Terry in Madison. Terry, hi.
Hi. It's a thrill to be on this show. I listen all the time.
Thank you.
I have a bunch of questions, and maybe you could just come out to my yard and I could walk you around.
We get that a lot.
I'll bet you do. But I'll stick to two of them. Irises. I put some in a couple of years ago, and they need dividing already.
Mm-hmm.
They're just huge. And is it too late to do that?
Where are you located?
Oh, you're
in Madison.
Okay, yeah, you're getting pretty late, but you could probably do it if you do it this weekend.
This weekend,
yeah.
It's supposed to get real cold next week, is why I'm hesitating.
You know,
about
but
this.
That said, if they're just are they just bearded iris?
They're
pretty tough, and so I would go ahead and divide them, and I would make a point of trying to get in dividing them every 2 to 3 years. Even they will grow that fast, and that's the best way to keep the iris borer out of them. So if you divide them this weekend, there, you got your weekend plans now. Get them divvied up. Anything that's going to be kind of gross looking, just we'll just sum it up that way. If it looks rotted or any kind of damage to it, discard it. Clean, break off and clean. Well, no, you don't even need to clean. Just break off the healthier looking tissue. Maybe cut back the fans to about 4-6 inches.
Yep. Okay.
And then just neatly arrange them where you want them. For everything else in my garden, I get pretty laid back. But when it comes to my iris, I get all the rhizomes and having the buds facing the same way. Mm-hmm. So when they're growing,
right,
they're actually all moving in the same direction. And
sure.
I do like that appearance so much more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And if you do have problems with iris borer, you can try using imidacloprid.
Imidacloprid.
That. Yeah, that's the active ingredient in that Bayer Advanced Lawn and Garden Care
series.
Yeah. Product.
Mm-hmm. Bayer, like the aspirin.
Right.
Yeah.
You're, okay, by Bayer?
Mm-hmm. Bayer. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay, and the other question was mulch. I sometimes lose plants for putting it on too early, and I sometimes lose plants for leaving it on too late, and sometimes lose plants for taking it off too soon. Is there any secret?
Experimentation. Yeah, experimentation. You know, we all lose plants for one reason or another, and if yours is for mulch, then...
What kind of mulch are you using?
Mostly leaves.
Okay.
Leaves can be tricky, though. If you are using leaves, they can form a heavy mat if you don't fluff them on occasion.
Or run them through the lawnmower first.
Yeah, you know, I have my neighbor, you know, he gives me all his leaves, and he just blows them over with the lawnmower, so by the time I get them, they're really shredded.
Uh-huh.
But as I tell him, as I talk to master gardeners in my classes, I go, you can use leaves. Leaves are great, but they do take a little finesse to use.
Yeah.
In the spring, you need to fluff them up to allow oxygen and to get to the soil.
Okay.
You need to keep them from smothering plants because they can smother if you're not careful.
Yeah, I know.
Particularly things like Norway maple leaves, big flat leaves like that just mat down. Now, oak leaves, on the other hand, usually tend to kind of crisp up. And they're a lot, the aeration tends to be a little bit better.
Uh-huh, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The irises, do they need any mulch? I think I put leaves on them last year and took them off.
No, they don't really.
They don't need it, but I lightly throw some on mine, but who am I to tell you how to grow iris? I like to arrange mine neatly in a row. I'll do it just to get a little organic matter in there, but again, if it's leaves, you know, you don't need to mulch them heavy.
No. Okay. The thing that I worry about with the German bearded iris, you know, when you plant them, you want to make sure half of the rhizome is above the soil and half of it is below. If you start putting a lot of the shredded bark mulch like I use on those sorts of things, you can end up with the whole rhizome buried.
Yeah.
So that's the only thing that I would worry about with that. But if you're putting on leaves that you're going to break, you know, rake off, then that's not a big
should be
problem.
All right.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Terry, for calling. And Bill in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Larry. Good show again.
Thank you. What can we do for you?
Hello?
Hi. What can we do for you, Bill?
I just planted some grass seed about 5 weeks ago. It'll be 5 weeks on Monday.
Well, that's good. It's 5 weeks ago.
Yeah, it's coming up good. I mowed it a couple times. But I'm wondering if I can, if it's too early to throw some weed killer on it, because there's an awful lot of weeds in it.
Uh-oh.
You mean like a pre-emergent type
thing? No, just the broadleaf.
Oh, the broadleaf stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, if they're really bad, if you could spot treat with a spray bottle. Don't do anything broadcast over the large area. But if you got some really troubled areas with the broadleaves, you can come in and spray those possibly. But I'd be careful.
It's
sensitive.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait till the spring?
No. You could do it now, but just spot treat it. Don't come in there and just do a broad application across the whole area. Come in with just a handheld spray bottle of your broadleaf weed killer of choice and just spot treat the areas that are the most problematic.
And then in the spring, you may need to rebroadcast some seed over those troubled areas.
Mm-hmm.
But how soon after I plant the grass am I able to broadcast, you know, do the whole lawn, treat the whole lawn?
For weeds?
Yeah.
You know, I would make sure it's an established lawn for starters, but I also try to discourage people to do just kind of that broadcasting over the whole lawn, because you can then you're just spraying chemicals around everywhere. By doing spot treatment, I know personally I find it to be a little more effective, because I can go out there, target my areas of where there's problems, and using the liquid, you get better contact with the surface, better absorption in, and that usually takes care of the weed problems for me better than doing some sort of sort of broadcast application.
Yeah, if your turf is healthy, it will help fight off the weeds. If you make sure to mow it high, fertilize it on the holiday schedule, keep it watered, it should be able to fend off a lot of those weeds. And areas that are having problems, if you do spot treat it, you know, you're saving yourself some money, you're saving the environment some chemicals.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Well, I have half my lawn, or a part of my lawn, is Creeping Charlie free, but of course that's because we had to sod an area, and the Creeping Charlie's going to be in there, I'm sure, next year, just like it is on the rest of the lawn. And the other thing that happened, and this is something I was kind of, the minute we put down the of the sod, we got moles.
Oh.
Mole in there, so it's running around, and trying to get rid of that mole is not an easy thing to do.
No.
Yvonne in Brown Deer, hi.
Good morning or good afternoon, wherever we are. I'm calling about the strawberry problem this woman had.
Oh, good.
Sure. Yeah, I've been doing some research because I'm rebuilding my strawberry garden, and what I learned is you should wait after you've had a strawberry bed for some time, 2 to 3 years before you put strawberries in there again. And the other thing I ran across was that if you suspect you have a disease problem, throwing a lot of grass clippings in there or doing a cover crop of grass and then tilling that in can help with a lot of various diseases that develop in soils.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you agree with that, Mike?
Well, I don't think it's an extension recommendation right at this time, but I think by coming in with a completely different crop, in this case you're using turf grass, if there's a disease living in that area and you use it as a cover crop, it's not going to live off that turf grass.
No.
It's totally different. So it's probably going to go away on its own as long as it's not putting down any spores. Letting it go like that for 2 to 3 years, you know, we talk about crop rotation in the garden. You know, mm-hmm. I could see some of the reasoning behind it as for, you know, whether or not turf grass works better than other plants. That mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah.
But hey, this is what I say is what makes up the art of horticulture. What works mm-hmm. for you that we can't explain by science. Yeah, that's the art part.
Thanks, Yvonne.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, appreciate the input. And Kathy in South Beloit, I believe, is next. Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
I've been hearing a lot of things about rain barrels lately, and I was kind of wondering about the benefits of them.
The benefits of rain barrels. Well, they're a great way of catching all that extra rainwater coming off and keeping it going just down into the storm sewers and that. It's also a very affordable way to collect some water for your garden to use. You're not bringing in any of the kind of chemicals from the treated water, from the water treatment plant, if that's an issue. Yeah, there a lot of people are into rain barrels nowadays. I know our Master Gardener program's been doing a pretty good turnover on rain barrels that they've been selling to the mm-hmm. public with a lot of people who are conscious of their water usage these days, especially in this drought.
Yeah, and the drought we had, you bet. The rain barrels came in awfully handy in mm-hmm. July.
Yeah. And then
they overflowed in August.
Oh, they overflowed quickly, too. So, yeah, rain barrels, they are a good thing to have. There's a lot of different locations making movements to promote the usage of rain barrels and water and wise water usage in the garden.
The one thing that I don't recommend is using that water on your house plants. But for your outdoor plants, that's a great thing.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you, Kathy. Kathy in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Kath.
Hi, and thank you. My question is about dwarf Alberta spruce and the method that Lisa suggested for rhododendrons with the hardware cloth and burlap and such. Is that something you would recommend for dwarf Alberta, or is there something better?
No, that's actually what I would recommend. There are, and you may see them out in the garden centers, various anti-transparent products that can be sprayed on conifers, but the latest research is showing that first of all, they don't last the whole winter, and then you need to reapply them, but sometimes they hang on later in the summer than you would wish and actually block some of the transpiration. So I'm not recommending those anymore, and I am recommending the burlap. That's about the best that you can do, protect it from windburn. Oh,
okay.
And make sure that you water all your evergreens real well going into the fall.
Yes, let's just pause and lecture everyone for that this moment is, yes, our evergreens, if there's anything you guys need to do, keep your evergreens well hydrated going into this fall so it minimizes winter burn. And just as a side note, we do at Rotary Botanical Gardens throw around a lot of our sensitive plants, our sensitive evergreens, some sort of burlap windbreak around them to minimize wind burn.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and would you put that down like around Thanksgiving, and when would you take that off, or is that too late or too soon to put that around?
I don't think it's too soon. You know, sometimes we have had two below zero in the early part of November. You know, you just never know with Mother Nature.
Yeah, it's going to depend on when you have the time and what Mother Nature throws at you. So, you know, I'd like to say, yeah, do it this weekend and take it off in the first of April. But it all depends on what the weather's going to be. So you're going to have to use your decision and
yeah, kind of pay attention to that 7-day forecast that's coming up in November. And when you see that cold weather, why, it's probably a time to put it on.
Yep.
Okay, great. Thank you much.
Thanks much for calling. Mary Jane in Mesa Mania. Hi to you.
Hi. Thank you for having me on.
Sure.
The previous caller asked about rain barrels. I have two. I've had them for 2 years, and I love them. And I do really do recommend them. So
thank you.
Very reasonable through sustained gain. But my question is, I have the Hydrangea Endless Hummer. I've had it now for its third year, and it's trying to commit suicide.
Yeah.
I thought I had it sighted correctly. I know hydrangeas seem to need more water, and so it gets a lot of its watering from the rain barrel. But even when I know it's well hydrated, it looks like it wants to die.
That's because it's wanting to die.
It is. Okay.
Yeah.
So is this something I should just say, well, it was lovely and treated as an annual?
I'll just put it this way. We had them planted at the Botanic Garden. We no longer have them planted at the Botanic Garden. We will not replant them at the Botanic Garden.
Okay.
Read between the lines on that one, okay? It had a lot of hype coming.
Still does.
Still has a lot of hype.
And they are beautiful when they're in flower.
When they live.
But I think they're a little bit less remontant, which is the blooming on the new wood, than they were advertised to be, at least in our area. And I've talked to a grower who has them just slightly south of the border. We both agree that you probably need a little more sun than they're advertised to be. Probably need to mulch them real well in the winter. And, of course, make sure that your soil is acid if you want blue instead of pink.
Yes, I've mulched very well around it. I notice that it dies back. I fertilized early in the spring with time release, and it'll look good for a while, and then it's trying to commit suicide again. So I think I'll dig it up and put something else.
Yeah, that's probably the best thing.
All right.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah, bye-bye. Thanks, Mary Jane. Gary in Cuba City, your turn. Hi, Gary.
Hello there. Hey, I've got just the opposite problem. We have plants that will not die. And they are...
Wish they would.
Yeah, exactly.
I think you'll probably find a home for one in Mesa Mania.
Right. The previous owner must have had a real sense of humor here, because these are yucca plants.
Oh, yeah.
My sympathies.
And we've tried digging. There's no bottom to them. We've tried Roundup and just have settled on keeping them cut low, I guess.
Yeah.
But is there anything that will get rid of them?
Boy, they're a monocot, so you can't use any of the brush killers on
them. No, yeah, they're going to be very hard to tackle. Yeah. I know I've got a couple in my yard that I've just learned to love because they're not going anywhere.
And the roots are horrible.
Yeah. If you really want to try anything, try to dig out as much of it as you can, as deep as you can. That's about my only suggestion, because it's going to have a very substantial root going down.
Yeah. Persistence.
You may want to then, once you get it dug down and refill that soil, maybe put a big hunk of metal on top of it or a big rock. So if it's going to want to come up, it's going to have that barrier it's got to push through. I think whatever you can do to abuse this plant and send the message that it's not welcomed, will help weaken it to the point where maybe one day it will just not come back and go the way of the endless summer. Yeah, just keep cutting it down if that's the way. Or you can just give in, embrace it, plant a bunch of other nice flowers around it, and that's the route I've gone.
It seems to thrive on abuse. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, thanks, Garrett. Gene in Dubuque, Iowa. Hi.
I have a question on hydrangeas, too. I just bought some half price, at
one of our garden centers, and one is called Nickel Blue, and the other one, I'm calling from work, so I don't have the name with me, but yeah. It's supposed to be some kind of ever-blooming one. Am I wasting my time then planting those? Or?
Well, the Nickel Blue is going to be your biggest problem, because that only will rebloom on new wood. You'll get lots of nice leaves, but it only reblooms on new wood, so that means you got to protect, or I'm sorry, on old wood.
Yeah.
That's the wrong word. So you got to make sure that you really protect it over the winter, mulch the heck out of it. Now, the ever-blooming one is probably endless summer again. And
I think that's what it is. Yeah.
So I would mulch that one as well. You probably will get more blooms out of that. And do put it in more sun than it says that it can take. You know, probably an east side would be wonderful where it gets morning sun.
Yeah, I think it says shade and some bonner.
Sun.
More sun.
More sun. The Nickel Blue, how would you protect the branches themselves from dying? Could I wrap it up with burlap?
Well, probably going back to what we've described so far by putting some sort of burlap screen or windbreak through the winter, that's probably be your best bet. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you have to ask yourself if you want to do that much work on it. I would actually just try it a season to see what kind of results you got, what you'll get based on your spacing. I know where you're at in Dubuque, you can have some really nice protected spots where maybe you can get by with something.
What would be the best hydrangeas to buy then for this area?
I'm still a sucker for Annabelle's.
Yeah,
you like
them? You know, they're old-fashioned. Yeah, you got to prop them up because they get too big of a flower and it makes them fall over. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of great cultivars. I'm liking the new PG hydrangeas. There's all these new mm-hmm. panicle ones that have some great shape to their flowers. There's just a whole bunch of the...
Tardiva.
Yeah.
Unique.
But stay away from the big leaf ones, the macrophylla.
Mm-hmm.
But to go with the arborescence or mm-hmm. the... panicle.
I really liked Daruma, but that's only available through Song Sparrow through mail order right now. But
I don't
it's
know.
Beautiful.
You know, I don't understand why garden centers in your area then why they sell these plants and, you know.
Well, people ask for them.
Yeah.
Well, you just think that they would sell ones that would survive a little better then.
Well, it's that they need a lot of fussing with is the problem. Yeah. But you actually being in Dubuque might do better than we do up here.
Yeah, yeah. You're far enough south. Yeah. You got the bluffs possibly that can be giving you some protection. Give it a try. I mean, you got them. Well, enjoy them. See what happens from it.
Should I kind of break the roots up? Do you think should I put them in when I put them in, or should I just leave them the way they are since it's getting kind of late?
When you're going to want to plant them for proper planting, they're probably going to be in a really composty mix. You might want to tease those roots apart to ensure good soil. Root contact to help get them established. You're going to want to put a layer of mulch, probably about 2 inches around that planting hole to help trap the moisture in there. Give them some good water, a good watering, and follow up with good watering in the spring for establishment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot, then.
Thanks for calling. And Teresa in Heartland. Hi.
Hi. I have several questions. First of all, you just mentioned about rainwater. I collect water from the downspouts. I don't have a rain barrel. I just mm-hmm. put it in milk cartons. And, mm-hmm. and I've been using it for my houseplants. What's the reason you shouldn't use it for houseplants?
The reason is because there's all kinds of stuff that is on your roof that might not work too well with houseplants that have been planted in fairly sterile soil. Particularly if you get stuff in your gutters, if you get leaves that are rotting, fruits that are rotting.
Well,
I found a rotted
it.
Chipmunk up there once, which was exciting. So, you know, things like that.
I'm taking it out of the, as it comes out of the downspout and then putting it into a bucket that way where I'm making sure I don't have the gravel from the roof or any mm-hmm. of that, and I just discard all that.
Sure.
And they're getting the clear water,
mm-hmm.
and that's been working very good for my plants because I figure you got the nitrogen from the... thunderstorms and stuff, and
mm-hmm.
and it's worked really well.
Sometimes there can be components in shingles, too, mm-hmm. that can be like an anti-moss component or something like that that can leach out. Maybe that's not so much an issue here in the Midwest mm-hmm. as it is in the Pacific Northwest and that. But mm-hmm. there can be products in there that can leach out and cause damage to plants.
I've been making sure I got the clear water.
You can't see the bacteria and so on. But if it's working for you, like Mike said, the art of horticulture, if it's working for you... That's great, but I don't recommend it on a normal basis.
What'll happen is if you start to develop problems with any of these plants you're watering, one of the first places I would start is looking at the quality of the water you're using. So just be wary on it. And if you do have a problem, be sure to mention, yes, I'm using rainwater.
Okay. Thanks very much for calling, Teresa. And Lisa and Mike, thank you so much. Boy, the time, 90 minutes, went pretty darn fast today, didn't it? Thanks. We'll look forward to another visit. I hope you'll both come back.
Most definitely.
All right. Great. Lisa Johnson is Dane County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Mike Maddox, Rock County UW Extension Horticulture Educator. Really pleased to have them with us today. And, of course, we're going to have some more editions of Garden Talk. I can't remember who's up next Friday, but know that there'll be somebody there, and he or she will do a great job. And Monday, we'll take a look at physical therapy issues with Lori Tyne Brody. In the meantime, thanks a lot for listening, and please stay with us. There's lots more to hear on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.